Writers Cast, a podcast about books and authors. I'm David Wilk, your host, and today I'm talking to Kelly Stanley, whose new book is called City of Dragons. Hi, Kelly. How are you?
Hi, David. I'm great.
Good. Nice.
Thanks for having me.
Oh, it's a pleasure to talk to you. So just to sort of set everybody up, City of Dragons is a novel. It's what you might call a noir. It takes place in, I think the whole thing takes place in 1940.
Right, February 1940.
Right, which is 70 years from back from now, which seems hard to believe. And this is your second book. You know, I did a little research on you and saw that you had done an earlier book, also historical fiction, but obviously a completely different period.
Right, that would be Nox Dormienda. And that's set in 83 A.D. in Roman Britain. And the reason I started with that era is because I wrote that when I was getting my master's degree in classics. And it still has elements of what I attempt in City of Dragons in that it's written in a noir style. In fact, I coined Roman noir as sort of a subgenre that the book represented. And I was very happy that it, and very honored that it won the Bruce Alexander Award for Best Historical Mystery of the Year. And it was published with a small press. So 2009 actually saw me move to one of the big major publishers with City of Dragons, my current book. And I also sold the sequel to Nox Dormienda to my current publisher, Thomas Dunn Minotaur Books. So I'm now with one of the big guys. So I'm kind of like Joe DiMaggio moving up from the minors to the majors.
From the San Francisco Seals to the New York Yankees.
Exactly.
Right. Well, so let's talk a little bit. I mean, I'm interested in the leap from Rome to San Francisco, but I want to make sure we talk about this book. I love your main character, who's a female detective, who's, it's kind of, she's definitely of the period. And, it resonates for anybody who's read, the sort of classic detective novels of the 20s and 30s and 40s. You know, you've got all of the, the requisite, all the requisites are there.
Thank you.
But she's, there also is something about her I found very kind of sad, too,
mm-hmm.
In a way that no male, the male detectives, they have their flaws. They're always, they're not perfect, but they have to have flaws in order to be attractive to us, I think. But she's wounded.
Yeah.
And maybe you could talk a little bit about how you created her.
Sure.
Clearly, there are things about her that are really remarkable that I think would only happen for a woman detective.
Thank you, David. I really appreciate that because that's one of the themes I was really going for with Miranda. She is a wounded person. She's a damaged person, but not in the same way that, say, Philip Marlowe is a damaged knight-errant. And, of course, you get sort of... bits and pieces of her background, and that was a purposeful decision that I made with this book because I'd like to really see this series continue for a long, long time because she is a rich character, and I feel like I could write her all the way through the political upheavals into the 50s in the civil rights era.
You go back with her. I guess I'm sort of breaking in here, but she has in the background her involvement in the Spanish Civil War, which is very interesting, I think.
Exactly. As a former volunteer nurse, there was a great idealistic generation of people who lived in the 30s. Most of them were liberals. Some of them participated in the Communist Party.
There is
a character in the book who is a friend of Miranda's, Benta Gallagher, who is a member of the Communist Party. And Miranda, as you can tell, isn't really a party member, but she did participate in that conflict. She at one point in one of the chapters, it's mentioned that she taught English in the Central Valley to impoverished kids. And at the same time, she winds up becoming an escort, which is probably somewhat of a shock to most people who would read it, and they would think, well, how do you go from being an English teacher to an escort to a private detective? And that is the, you know, that's the essence of Miranda's character. It is a life journey, and she is still in the process of going around a bend on that journey, so to speak, at Drank City of Dragons.
I would suspect that probably more people than we realize have had those journeys. That you know, the people who were active, let's say, in the political upheavals of the 30s, Spanish Civil War, and others, later did other things. And you know, it's sort of, and you know, of course, many people have been sex workers and then gone on to other things. So in some ways, she's very modern because she, you know, she kind of reflects all these different sides to herself, and she's willing to be whoever she is in that moment, you know, and take on that role.
Well, exactly. And one of the points I wanted to sort of demonstrate with City of Dragons, if you can call it that, because I'm as a writer, I really sort of let my subconscious do the work, but I did have a few conscious ideas that were sort of out there, not really perfectly formed, but that were definitely part of I guess what you would call an agenda. And one of them is that Miranda represents the way, to me, the way that every woman that I know, and every woman from every generation, grandmothers, great-grandmothers, to teenagers, once you become sexually mature, even from a young age, you learn that very quickly that you are basically prey, to put it in Wild Kingdom terms, that you are a target for whatever attention, some that you may want and some certainly that you don't want. And I think that is a mindset that women intuitively recognize and understand, and it's a mindset that Miranda has had to use and has tried to sort of use it for her own benefit. In other words, she is what I would call a femme fatale, in that she understands sex and she understands allure. She understands what it means to use her face and her body to get what she wants. It's just that her desires and her goals are different from, obviously, from the stereotypically, and I would say misogynistic, femme fatales that absolutely were, you know, everywhere in noir literature.
Right, well, that's
in the 30s and 40s.
Those were tools and figments of male imagination, as opposed to Miranda, who's a figment of a female imagination.
Right.
You know, that she's working, she's an empowered woman rather than an objectified woman.
Exactly. Well, she is objectified, but she uses it for her own, she's reusing that. So
she's objectified by others, but not by herself.
Exactly. And that's why I characterize her as a femme fatale in the PI role. So it's almost like a gender switch, in that I'm taking some of the elements of traditional classic noir and hard-boiled, some of the icons, and I'm trying to sort of do a pivot on them and say, look, if you want to stigmatize beautiful women as always being this way, let's see what a real beautiful femme fatale in 1940, what a real woman might actually think or do if she's empowered.
But of course, she also has tremendous suffering.
Yeah.
Both emotionally, she's as you said earlier, I mean, she's wounded, she suffers. She suffers from her past. She had, you know, lost the love of her life. Her father is not exactly warm and fuzzy, you know, and a loving father. There's no mother present. You know, she's got a lot of issues. And she also had to build all of these, you know, build a lot of protective devices for herself. But then she also gets beaten up. She gets run over. I mean, this is not like an easy easy life for what she set out to do. And she, you know, she's tough.
But, oh yeah.
You know, in incredible ways. But you know, it isn't easy, and you don't gloss over the suffering that goes along with it.
Well, you know, I think that's important. To me, it's the the protagonist that bounces back, everything leaves a mark. As a writer, because this has always been planned to be a series, and in fact, I'm writing book two right now. As a writer, everything that has happened with that character should change that character to some degree, you know. So, you know, her past has made her what she is. What she goes through in City of Dragons then also, you know, changes her in ways that you find, you know, that you will see in subsequent books. And every case is going to leave a mark, because every case, everything that she goes through, you know, does that to a real person. I mean, every year that goes by, we become someone somewhat different than we were the year before. We hopefully grow and we hopefully learn. Sometimes we suffer greatly. But I guess you can say Miranda is sort of a summing up of a maxim that my father taught me. And he's from Kentucky. My grandfather was an impoverished coal miner who had 8 children, and my dad was on his own from the time he was 12. So he understands a lot about suffering. And he's, being from Appalachia, it's still a suffering area of America. And the saying is, character is built on the edge of despair. Well, I grew up with that phrase. And in essence, I guess you can say Miranda represents that. She has the character and the will and the ethical, moral dimension, the desire, I guess you could say, to find justice for people who can't find it for themselves. And she's willing to do what she needs to get it done.
Well, and that is the essence of a hero, I think, or mm-hmm. a heroine, if you want to make it feminine. I mean, she is motivated by much more. I mean, she's not motivated by money in the purest sense. You know, she takes this case essentially, you know, almost the way that, you know, you sometimes hear cops talking about the fact that they speak for the victims, that they're the people whose job it is to, kind of give salvation to the victim.
Right.
And I think she feels, you know, you see that throughout. She's not only doing this for the first, you know, the story opens with her finding this guy, Eddie Takahashi, Japanese kind of semi-gangster, I guess, you know, sort of numbers runner.
Right.
Who gets shot during the Rice Bowl festival. She finds him. She's not being paid to investigate his murder. In fact, initially, you know, nobody wants her to talk about it or look at it because there's, you know, they want to shove it under the rug. I mean, it's a very complicated story, so I don't think I want to try to summarize it and especially give away a lot of it, because I think it's challenging. But I don't want anybody who hears this to know too much. I think you want to find these things out by yourself. But she is motivated throughout, because there are a lot of different people that she comes across in this book. And I was a little surprised at how many people, in fact, she ends up saving.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that is really who she is. She's like this almost a metaphysical character in that way.
Well, thank you. You know, that's the sort of person I wanted to write about, because to me that is what crime fiction really is about. It's what my favorite crime fiction is about. It's and really any kind of literature. It's about someone who is willing to make sacrifices, who's trying to better the world in one way or the other. And sometimes people do it in a grandiose manner, and some people do it one person at a time. And Miranda, I think, as any effective protagonist would be, is someone who wants to help people because she understands what it's like to be a victim. And that's where we get the suffering again. I mean, when you understand what it means to be objectified, or if you understand what it means to not have a mother, or you understand what it means to go through, to see what happened in Spain, you know, which was absolutely horrendous, it's going to give you an understanding of what it might be like to be a Japanese teenager in Chinatown after the rape of Nanking, which is, you know, essentially the opening plot, because you've got you've got a little tiny district where you had Asian Americans lumped in together by a racist society, and they were expected to sort of huddle there. And at the same time, you had Chinese businesses and organizations who were actually boycotting the Japanese businesses that were in Chinatown. And there was a great deal of resentment. In fact, when I was writing the book, I was speaking to a friend of mine who's Chinese American, and he said certain friends of his still refuse to go to Japanese restaurants today. And ironically, when I wrote this book, I didn't realize that this little store was on Sacramento Street where Eddie's murder happens. But if you go to Sacramento and Grant today, you will find a little shop that's dedicated to what they call preserving the truth of what happened in the Sino-Japanese War. So, I mean, this is in Chinatown in 2010, 70 years later. So it's something that has had long, long resonance. It's like, the Holocaust was the Holocaust, but it's comparatively like an Asian or a Chinese Holocaust, the Rape of Nanking. And, that's, the kind of pressure that Eddie Takahashi would have been under feasibly. And that's why the police want the murder hushed up, because they believe it's racial hatred.
So I know you're from San Francisco.
Mm-hmm.
The city is, vibrant and alive in the book, and you obviously know it well. But did you have to do a lot of research on on what was going on in 1939, 1940? I mean, how much was sort of, how much work did you have to do?
Well, I did a lot of work, but that's, the research is actually one of, I think for most people who write anything to do with history in particular, is always one of the most fun elements. It entailed buying a 1940 San Francisco phone book, because I tend to be a little bit obsessive compulsive. So as much as possible, the phone numbers of some of the businesses are actual phone numbers. There really was a Diane's escort service at the address there. Prices in the restaurants are accurate. Most of the businesses,
the drinks and things like that.
Oh yeah, drinks and so forth. All
clubs,
that stuff.
And were there really that many? You a tremendous number of nightclubs and all
this city was absolutely rollicking. I mean, what people don't realize is at this time, people spent their lives out. They spent their lives in a much more social way than people do now. I mean, now all socialization seems to be taking place on the internet. But in 1940 and up to the 50s, it was visiting neighbors, it was going out dancing, it was out, out, out. And it was standard for a lot of restaurants to be open 24 hours a day. Lots and lots of clubs. I mean, clubs everywhere. And these are big clubs with dance floors and shows and ice skating shows and, I mean, all kinds of things. We lost that really with television, because that moved the center of entertainment from being outside the home to inside the home. And that had, and the effects it's had on American culture are still resonating today. But at this time, everything was outside. That's why you could have a 3-day citywide, basically, Rice Bowl party in the streets of Chinatown and closed down all the traffic, and everybody went drinking in the streets, fashion shows, dancing. It was quite a time.
Well, you definitely brought that to life. I mean, that's there, and as a backdrop for a novel is pretty good, I think. I like your characters. I think this, we've talked a little bit. I think the story is pretty gripping. It's complex. So overall, I think it's a terrific book.
Oh, well, thank you, David. I appreciate that.
I compliment you on that. And I really hope this book is successful, and I'm actually kind of looking forward to reading more with Miranda as the main character.
We've got something coming up quickly. As I said, I'm writing the second novel, but I've actually have a Miranda short story that's a prequel to City of Dragons. It takes place on Treasure Island, which we didn't get a chance to talk about, but you know, that's the World's Fair that Miranda works at during the season, and it's set in 1939. And the short story will be in a book called First Thrills, First Thrills, High Octane Stories from the Hottest Thriller Writers. And it's from the International Thriller Writers. It's an anthology. And the name of the story is called Children's Day, and it's coming out June 22nd from Tor. Well, so that is a Miranda story. And then, as I said, I'm still working on the one on the sequel to City of Dragons, and I'm hoping if it's successful, if the first book's successful enough, I'll be able to continue writing them because I really love the character, and I love the period. And, you know, I live in San Francisco, and it's a treat for me to get to share that love with readers.
Well, I think that you've been successful at it, and I hope this is the first of many. And I do want to say that you have a – I recommend people to go to your website, which is Kelly, K-E-L-L-I, Stanley, S-T-A-N-L-E-Y. It's a pretty nice website, and I think it would be – it's worth a visit. So I want to thank you very much for being on my show. This is David Wilk for Writer's Cast, a podcast about books and authors. I've been talking to Kelly Stanley about her new book, City of Dragons, which is coming out in February 2010. Thank you, Kelly.
Thank you, David. Take care.